Hello and welcome to The Pioneers, brought to you in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. This series explores some of the most innovative ideas in science, technology, conservation, medicine and beyond that are making the world we live in a better place. The destruction of the Amazon has been making headlines a lot this year as vast amounts of its forests have been devastated by monstrous fires. But that's not the only force that's destroying the area's inhabitants. One Amazonian creature that's been under threat for a while now is the arapaima. The arapaima is the largest scaled freshwater fish in the world. It can grow to an almighty 3 meters long. But due to overfishing and pollution, this beast's numbers are dwindling. And that's where our guest this week comes in. The Brazilian ecologist, João Campos Silva, has proved that this creature can be saved. And in doing so, will help the livelihoods of indigenous communities who depend upon it. Campos Silva speaks to Andrew Muller at Rolex's headquarters in Geneva.
Let's start with the giant arapaima. For people who haven't seen one, which I'm guessing is going to be most people, how would you describe it? What does one look like?
Wow. The arapaima, it's like a huge fish. It can reach up to 3 meters and more than 200 kilos. So it's like a freshwater monster.
That is a huge, huge fish. But does it live? It's a freshwater fish, obviously. Does it live only in one quite limited part of the Amazon?
Actually, the arapaima have evolved in the Pebas Lakes. It was a huge lake in the Amazon, formed our floodplains, our current floodplains. So this fish is adapted to anoxic environment. So they need to come to the surface to get the air. And the arapaima is present in many parts of Amazon, actually.
So is that unusual for river fish that it breathes air directly from above the surface?
No. It's really uncommon. It's one of the very few fish do that. And the arapaima, it's a very particular case of devolution in Amazon, you know.
And in its current state, it's obviously endangered, and your work is hoping to make it less endangered. But how endangered is it right now? Does anyone have a clear idea of numbers?
The arapaima have been playing a central role on Amazon culture since the development of first human society. Mm. So it's a very traditional fish for indigenous groups before the arrival of Portuguese in Brazil. Always a very important fish. But over the last century, the wild populations have declined due to overfishing. So the arapaima became extinct in many localities in Amazon. It's very hard to provide an exact number on arapaima population because we do not have like a proper sampling across the whole Amazon. But in some parts of the Amazon, the arapaima got extinct.
So what's been the cause of that overfishing? Has it been indigenous peoples who live there overfishing it, or has it been people from outside the region overfishing it as well, or both?
Yeah, actually, the overfishing was induced by large commercial boats from large cities, such as Manaus, Belém do Pará, which is large cities in Amazon. So they have like a huge boats which can induce this overfishing, not local communities or local groups, because they do not have like enough technology and enough funding to perform like big fisheries, you know.
So in terms of your work in trying to restore the population of the great arapaima, what's the best way to describe how your program or your ideas for preserving it are working right now?
Yeah. This program arises from a very important question for us in tropical developing countries, which is, can we put together biodiversity conservation and people in the same package? This is a very important question. And in the arapaima case, basically, people are empowered to protect its territory. So they can establish no-take areas where fishing are forbidden. In this environment, the arapaima and many other species can increase its population, and this increasing can generate many social benefits, including cultural maintenance, income generation, sense of proud social organization, and also gender equity. Because for the first time in Amazon, women have been making their own money. For centuries, women were involved in fisheries, but the income comes for their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
But now with the Arapaima, they are being empowered, you know.
So how is it possible to make the Arapaima an economic asset in that way without actually fishing it?
Actually, they fishing the Arapaima, mm-hmm. because when you have like the spatial zoning of your territory, you have protected lakes where the fishing are forbidden, and you have managed lakes where local communities are allowed to harvest in the Arapaima. Outside this model, the Arapaima fishery is illegal. So when you start to protect the territory, you can count the number of Arapaima every year, because when the Arapaima come to the surface to take the air, you can count it. So then you can send the number for the government, and the government can allow a quota. So once per year, the community have been managing the Arapaima population, generating a huge income for them. So these protected lakes works as a bank account that you can get money once per year. And it's a very good amount of money. So you can invest this money in your community, for example. You can improve the schools, improve the health centers. You can improve your infrastructure as a whole. And it can provide you also a social security. For example, if you get sick, you can go to a big city to receive the health treatment. For example, last year we had like 3 cancer cases in these mm-hmm. areas, and the Arapaima management have paid for all treatment for these people. It is unprecedented in this place. For example, some few years ago, these people would die in the bank of the lake.
How long a process has it been for you, though, to explain the benefits of looking after the Arapaima population in this way to the local people? Did you, especially at first, did you encounter skepticism?
Yes, probably in the beginning, but now it's really interesting because the Arapaima have become a real bright spot in Amazon, which is able to boost the optimism between people. So the resilience of Arapaima is really high. So in 3 years protecting the territory, the habitats, the population increases a lot and you can start the management. So the social, economic and cultural benefits are really, really tangible. So it's not an outsider message. People from local communities have been realizing that local communities very close to them are improving their quality of life with this case. So they are really, really engaged to start the management. And this is a big change in Amazon, because conservation started to make sense for local people. For a long time, people were excluded from the conservation paradigm. So people would want to protect the nature, to protect the wild places, but without people. But in reality, people, local people, are really part of the nature. And in this case, we can highlight the positive role that people can have in the conservation and also in the local development.
For you personally, what was the beginning of your interest in, not necessarily in conservation itself, but this particular fish? Why did you sort of think the Arapaima, that's the thing for me, that's what I want to work on?
Yeah, this is a very nice question, because it arises far from Amazon, far from Arapaima. But in my opinion, the world is dominated by a gloom and doom narratives. In every areas of knowledge, you always have the human destroying the planet. Mm. And I think that if we focus on positive messages, we can create like a collective thinking, a collective action towards a better place, you know, a better world. Mm. And in the Arapaima context, I saw that Arapaima has all ingredients that we need to send a positive message, not only at a local level, but also at an international level, because I think that the maintenance of tropical environment is deeper dependent of the inclusion of local people, the local perspectives, the local cosmologies. So the respect for traditional knowledge, it is very important, and it has been neglected over the last 200 years.
You mentioned there the local cosmology. I was interested in that. Does the Arapaima play a role as a, I guess, a cultural or mythical figure to the indigenous people you've been dealing with?
Yes. For some indigenous groups, for example, the Arapaima and the human has the same origin. So actually the Arapaima was a human. So they see the Arapaima as a similar. It's really interesting. I remember that when we started to work with an indigenous group in Brazil called Deni, they saw the Arapaima as a similar. So they spent 3 years protecting the environment, and the population of Arapaima jumped, increased many hundreds percent. And then we saw, oh, that's wonderful. Let's start the management. And then we went there with many colleagues from media to start the management of the need. And in the night before the management, the woman from the indigenous group, they get like the fight pictures in their bodies. And they went in the middle of the community and say, no, we are not to harvest the Arapaima because they are like similars. They are related to us. We cannot do that. And the guy said, oh, that's okay. Women don't want to harvest the Arapaima. Bye, guys. We prefer to be with plenty of Arapaimas in our lakes and not harvest it.
But do you think that's been a common mistake of a lot of conservationist projects, though, that they've often regarded maybe the indigenous peoples as an obstacle to what they're trying to accomplish rather than a potential asset, not just in terms of the knowledge that indigenous people would obviously have of an environment they've been living in forever, but also the respect they have for it as part of their cultural firmament? Do you see in what you're doing a model for engagement with indigenous communities elsewhere?
Actually, we need to understand deeper the relation between human and nature in this place. Mm. It's not only about money, to make money with biodiversity asset, but it's also a cultural asset, you know, it's also a cultural resource. And they have a very strong connection, and we need to understand it to build a really bottom-up project. Otherwise, we're going to keep doing top-down projects in tropical environment, and it will not work, you know, because you do not have local peoples engaged. Amazon has more than 6 million people, forest dwellers, you know. If we can show that conservation makes sense, that conservation is a pathway to keep their culture and also to provide economic benefits and other kind of benefits, they will be very engaged in conservation programs.
When you think about the project you're running with the Arapaima, and this is a question I want to ask in the context of the Rolex Award, which is, among many other things, part of Rolex's Perpetual Planet campaign, helping people who are looking for solutions to environmental challenges. Is there a kind of endpoint ambition for this program? Where do you hope to see it having got to, say, 10, 15, 20 years from now? Are you going to stay focused on the Arapaima, or do you think what you've learned can be used to further other aspects of conservation in the Amazon?
Yes. At this moment, the Arapaima have been running in some protected areas. But now we would like to use the Arapaima to build like a river basin conservation and development model, which can be applied elsewhere in Amazon. If you do not have Arapaima, you should have other resources, important resources, with high cultural value, with high economic value, which can play this role that Arapaima have been playing in this model. But the idea is to build a truly bottom-up project which can be applied in large scale, not only in protected areas, but also in unprotected place. Because at this time, we see the protected area as an island of biodiversity, always battling against external factors. But we believe that protected area should be like a social ecological lab where we can develop new models of development to be applied in wider scale. So we believe that we can, in the next 3 years, build a very strong model based on local empowerment and biodiversity value chains to be applied in a much higher scale in Amazon.
And are you already noticing any impact on your work or on the recognition of your work from being given a Rolex award? Has it made any difference already?
Yes, for sure. Yes, it's very important, this visibility of the Rolex award. It can increase the legitimacy of the project and people stop to listen what are you saying. And of course, it's a huge outcome. And I'm really grateful with this opportunity to put in the spotlight that the local communities have been ensuring the protection of the forest, and they are very important to ensure the future of the Amazonia.
I mean, the state of the Amazon and the future of the Amazon actually has been in the news a lot this year, as you will know, regrettably for the wrong reasons. Despite the coverage, which has been incredibly gloomy, are you still optimistic about the possibilities for the Amazon, that it can be preserved and it can be protected?
Yeah. Actually, I believe that the optimism is the best petrol to keep running, you know. And it's not a naive optimism. Actually, I consider myself an optimistic guy, but I think that we have evidence that there are many positive projects running in Amazon. We need to put this project in the spotlight, and we need to create political will to build public policies to be applied in large scale in Amazon. We know that we are at the Amazon the last months was in a very international medias because of fires, but also have many positive issues occurring in Amazon. And I think that we need try to put these initiatives in the spotlight.
You're about to return to the Amazon to live for an indefinite period, which I think is a prospect that a lot of people would find perhaps somewhat daunting. What do you like about living there as an environment, not just to work in and to visit, but what is it that makes it a good place to live?
Amazon, it's a wonderful place because people are really, really nice. People are really receptive and really, really happy. And I don't know, but Amazon is one of the last frontier of the human knowledge. You know, we have groups of people without any contact with the modern civilization. It's incredible, you know. People who see the world in a completely different way. So Amazon, it's like there are too much life in Amazon. It's contagious.
That was João Campos Silva, who is one of Rolex's 2019 laureates. Over the coming weeks on The Pioneers, we'll be meeting more of these innovators whose bright ideas are changing the world we live in, including the glaciologist Joseph Cook, whose studies of ice are revealing the effects of climate change. But until then, thanks for listening.